Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there. This is a true crime podcast, as the title suggests. So please consider this your warning that it's not suitable for children, and it probably will contain content that may be triggering to some people. Also, it's an Australian true crime podcast, so Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners should be aware it may contain the voices of deceased people.
The producers of this podcast recognise the traditional owners of the land on which it's recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal elders past, present and those emerging.
A police officer by day, but a dangerous sex predator behind closed doors. One senior constable, Adrian Moore, now serving WA's longest jail term, handed to a rapist. The 53-year-old's depraved and violent sex acts forced upon his victims so sickening, a judge couldn't compare the 87 offences. Meeting some of his victims through dating sites since 2007, others fellow serving police officers. Running background checks on dates through his work computer before drugging them. The jury convicting him of inflicting vile, humiliating crimes against their will, including bestiality, all while filming the women at their most vulnerable. Jurors found the images so sickening they required urgent counselling.
In episode 460 of Australian True Crime, we spoke to Nicole Edwards, a former member of the Western Australian Police Force and a victim of Adrian Trevor Moore, Australia's worst serial rapist and also a former member of WA Police. In 2018, investigators began contacting women to tell them that Moore had used the police computer system to run background checks on them. This led to accusations of predatory behaviour, and eventually a warrant was executed on his home, which uncovered a trove of photographs and videos of him sexually abusing heavily sedated women. Over 200 individual women were featured in that material, and investigators set about identifying and contacting them. One of those women, Josie, is our guest today. Like Nicole, Josie is critical of WA Police's decision to have the case investigated initially and for some years by Internal Affairs rather than the Sex Crimes Unit. And she's joined Nicole's campaign calling for a thorough external inquiry into the handling of the case. She and Nicole have something else in common, which is that they both came into the situation with affection for the police service. Josie's father, now retired, was a proud career copper. We begin our conversation by talking about the first day she was contacted by the demons from Internal Affairs.
I got contacted in 2018 by Internal Affairs. So,
it's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
They went to my father's house because I was living there at the time because I was saving to build. And I remember getting a text from him and, you know, fat fingers and all that sort of stuff. And I remember being at work and getting a text from him going, I think he called them demons. It's like cop language. He goes, two demons from internals have been here looking for you. What have you done? And I was like reading it and I was like, okay, I've obviously misread this. So I said, yeah, very funny, Dad. And then he came back with, I kid you not. And there was a photo of the card.
Of the card.
Yeah.
That they'd left. Wow. So for an old copper like him, that would have shaken his tree.
Yeah. So as soon as I saw that card and I knew that Dad hadn't made a typo, I knew exactly who they were.
Did you?
Yeah, I knew. I knew it was about him. And I was waiting for them to ask me about being sexually assaulted. That's what I had going on in the back of my head the whole time, okay? So this is probably late May 2018. So I contacted them and all they spoke to me about was him accessing my details on the police computer and wanting to know whether or not I'd given him permission to do so. And I said no. And then they said, well, would you be prepared to give a statement in relation to that?
Well, that's another thing that we didn't really get to talk to Nicole about very much was part of the investigation into Adrian Moore when they finally started sniffing around was that they realised that he had been looking up some of his victims on the police computer. Now, I don't know about every state, every jurisdiction. I know that in Victoria and in Queensland, I thought it was flagged pretty much immediately if a police member looked at anybody up on the computer. Because I'll tell you how I know. One of my best friends, her big brother, is a copper. And when we were teenagers, he would look up every bloke we were dating.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Your dad's a copper, so you know what I mean. He'd look them all up and he'd go, no, for whatever reason, no. And he was vetting all these boyfriends. And then a day came where he said, oh, I can't do it anymore. And this is in the sort of 90s, early 90s, I can't do it anymore. Nowadays, you have to have a reason and it has to be very clear what you have to be associated with a case or whatever. You can't do it anymore.
That's right.
This bloke had been doing it in WA without anyone noticing for years. Until they went and started looking through the system at his fingerprint, basically his digital fingerprint. So how is it illegal in WA for police to go looking around on the system?
Yeah, you need a legitimate purpose for accessing the information. I think you got 6 months for
that alone.
Yeah. I don't know what info he was accessing, but he accessed my details more than once. And I think the first time he accessed was before we first went out back in 2011. So he was obviously checking me up on the system beforehand. And the way I interpret that now, knowing all the offending that he has done, is him preparing to offend, to see where I lived, what was nearby, places that he could be able to go to and probably not be interrupted. My offence occurred in 2011 and I was assaulted twice. So the first time he may have drugged me, but I couldn't be 100% on that. He anally raped me in the back of his car. And then the second assault, I was drugged. I knew without a shadow of a doubt, but I wasn't one of the women, which is absolutely horrific, who didn't know that they had been offended against until the police came to them.
So we learned from Nicole, when we spoke to Nicole, that there was a point at which WA police had to start phoning women and letting them know that they had identified them from the trove of videos and photos that they had found in Adrian Trevor Moore's possession. And a lot of those women had no idea that they had been raped by this man.
Yeah.
You were one of the women that they contacted. I believe roughly 160-something women were contacted, and you were one of those women.
Yes, I was. That was in August of 2019.
Did you know that you had been filmed or photographed?
I didn't know that I'd been photographed. He didn't have any footage of me that I'm aware of that wasn't part of the prosecution for my offences. But see, the thing is that I remember most of the second assault. So from my perspective, that's what's been difficult for me from 2011, dealing with that. And part of that as well is I know that it's not my fault. So you can know something in your head because it's a fact, it isn't. But I still can't help thinking I should have said or done something at the time because it was 2011. Maybe if I'd done something, maybe if I'd said something, you know, all the same thoughts that every, you know, most people would have. But I can't let that consume me or overwhelm me, but it's still like, it's still there.
Are you talking about a feeling of guilt towards the subsequent victims?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I mean, 2011, the first offence that he got convicted of occurred in 2007 and mine was in 2011. But my understanding from speaking to the other ladies, and also I went to the appeal hearing in the Supreme Court, was his violence was escalating.
Yeah, he was convicted in 2022, so it was a long...
It's a long time. It's just unbelievable to actually comprehend that this person was a serving police officer at the time and went on this rampage basically of brutalising women and not being held to account.
Was he serving when he assaulted you?
Yeah, he was.
And did that play into your decision not to report?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can look at things objectively, and at that time it was my word against his. That's all I knew. He was a serving police officer. I'd had a couple of drinks. I knew exactly how it would play out in court. And for a conviction to be beyond reasonable doubt, that would be difficult. Plus, he was a serving police officer. So who are they going to believe generally? You know, oh, she's just a bit upset. He's probably rejected her, or she regrets what's happened.
Plus, were you dating? Would they be able to say that you were seeing each other? Would they be able to skew it that way? What were the circumstances of your relationship, if I can put it that way?
I only saw him for a period of 3 weeks. So in my mind, that's not dating and that's not a relationship. No. Okay.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't comfortable with making a complaint at that time. And also, you know, you've just been sexually assaulted in a very bizarre way. Like, I knew that I'd been drugged, and trying to deal with that and try and process that and then go through all the steps in your mind in relation to, do I go to hospital? Do I do this? If I do that, does it get taken out of my hands? Do I have no control over it anymore? And having to go on a path that you're not comfortable with or prepared to move forward with. And in a lot of respects, it's easier to forget about it, which is, well, my way of coping with it basically was it didn't happen.
Yeah, because I'm thinking about Nicole's story where she talked about first coming in contact with this man in online dating. She did have some sexual contact with him that she didn't like, but it was part of the coercion that she felt like, oh, well, I did say yes to that. I didn't want to do it, but I did it. So that played into the feelings of confusion and guilt around, was this an assault? Was that an assault? I'm not sure if I said yes or no. I'm not sure to what extent I'm culpable and to what extent there was consent. You know, all of that confusion that is part of the manipulation of this man's MO. And so that's what I'm asking, you know, you, if you were caught up in that confusion about the fact that you'd been assaulted twice by this guy, was there confusion around, well, hang on, at what point did I make it clear that I wasn't consenting? Were you in that place?
In the first assault, I was saying no. Okay, so, and then you get to the point where it's happening anyway. So what are you going to do? You're stuck in the back of his car. He's on top of you, behind you. You're practically naked in a car park. Are you going to get out of the car and start running, or are you just going to lie there and just wait for it to be finished?
But you and I both know that police and prosecutors are going to say, okay, then how was there a second time?
Yeah, exactly. And that was what I berated myself over, you know, so many times.
And it's a horrible question for me to ask you, but I'm asking you because you and I both know, and this is what prevents women from reporting.
Yeah, well, because in my mind I was like, you idiot, why did you do that? Why? You know, why? I know now why I agreed to see him a second time. A lot of it was because he was a police officer. So I said no. If he had half a brain, he must have realised that that was a mistake. It's not going to happen again. Second of all was I was not going to have many drinks when I caught up with him that second time. I can look back now and see it was my attempt of gaining some control back in relation to, yes, I will see you again. We will be in a public place. I will talk to you and that's it, and I will not see you again. I did not expect to go for a drink with a serving police officer and be drugged, because all I can remember is being at, it was called the Foundry at the time. I remember being there. I got the first lot of drinks, because I didn't want him to get them. So I got the first drinks. I think I got him a beer. I got myself a wine. And then the second drinks he got. And the next thing I remember is being in his car with him driving.
Gosh.
Yep.
So you even had that somewhere in your gut, that suspicion about the drinks. But I so understand that brinksmanship of the dating game, of thinking to yourself, no, I don't want to end it on this note where I feel taken advantage of, where I feel like the last encounter, I gave away all my power, I lost all my power. I want to finish this relationship or finish this, whatever it is. I just want to get my power back. I want to yeah, I'll see him again, but I just want to feel good about an encounter with this person and feel strong about it. And the brinksmanship of it.
Yeah, and not be in a vulnerable position, just be able to be, yeah, I'll see you again. And in my mind, I'd already made up that that was it. I was not going to have any further contact with him. The thing that gets me is that when they were investigating him for looking up the details, they already had the thousands of videos and photos of hundreds of women that he'd brutalized. And that's all they did. It's totally unbelievable. I can't comprehend it. I mean, it's not even incompetence. And an incompetent investigator couldn't even be that bad.
No, there's some, I don't know what the word is to use, the decisions that were made about the investigation, keeping it with internal affairs instead of handing it over to the
sex assault squad. It should have gone to them straight away. They held on to this material for about 2 years. That's why I'm speaking now, is because I found out in October, it was around October last year, that when I spoke to Internal Affairs in 2018 and I told them, I only told them about one assault that he'd anally raped me, they already had this material and they did nothing with it. And that's where I'm stuck, okay? Because for the whole time, there was part of me thinking, you know, in June 2018, I gave them the statement in relation to him accessing my details. I also told them about him sexually assaulting me. The detective did say, you can make a complaint if you want to. And I said, I know I can, but what would the point be? And I went through the whole scenario that I did with you. I said it would be his word against mine. It's beyond reasonable doubt. It's very difficult to prove that in sexual assault cases when there's only he said, she said, and compound with that, he's a police officer. Okay. But in my mind, I am thinking this is Internal Affairs. They are already looking at him. I've been told by this detective he's looked up 200 women. 95 of them are prepared to give a statement about him accessing their details. So go and investigate. You know, I would have thought, you know, you can put two and two together and actually come up with four. It's not hard. That was June 2018. And then it was in August of 2019, I got a call from Internal Affairs again. And this time they wanted to speak to me about specifically Adrian Law, and whether or not he may or may not have assaulted me. But they didn't say that in the phone call about what they wanted to speak to me about my interaction with him. Then I knew, okay, this has got to be about the sexual assaults. The whole time I thought in some way I'd assisted, because they had acted on the information that I'd given them more than 12 months beforehand. And I know that things can take time and it can be slow. And if you're wanting to investigate, you need to do it thoroughly. But to find out that they had everything, that they, you know, this material is horrific. It is what has caused the jury so much trauma.
Yeah, jury members asking for counselling.
That's correct.
Yeah, because of having to view the photographs and videos that he had at home of the assaults that he'd committed.
Exactly. There is no way that I haven't viewed any of it, and I don't want to, but there's no way anyone in their right mind could view this material and say that the women were fully coherent or consenting. And for WA police to have this material in their possession and to do nothing with it.
Yeah.
Speechless. I'm speechless.
It's further further assault on the women involved is how it feels, doesn't it? To know that, as Nicole said, I mean, these are her workmates. You know, she's a copper and these other coppers are looking at the material that involves her and involves other women. And some of these women don't know. Some of these women still haven't been identified. And they're not, for a long time, not investigating it as a sexual crime. I mean, he's pled guilty to 177 unlawful computer access related charges.
You know what, Ari? Can I tell you what I thought at that time when he pled guilty? At the time I was thinking, I know why you've pled guilty, buddy, because you're hoping that no one else, this is what I was thinking, is that, okay, you'll go do your 6 months, but the real issue here, hopefully it'll be pushed under the carpet, no one will find out about it, you know, but to actually realise that it was pushed under the carpet and by who is, you know, it's just unbelievable.
If you'd like to talk to someone about abuse that's taken place in your life, no matter how long ago it happened, your GP is always a good place to start. If that's not going to work for you, you can contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or via their website 1800respect.org.au. Or you can call Lifeline's 24-hour phone counselling service on 13 11 14.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, in the end, he got 30 years.
Yep, he was convicted on both of my charges. He got 5 years each on mine.
On both of your rapes?
Yep.
5 years is pathetic, but at least how do you feel about that?
I'm pleased with that because his cumulative sentence for all 87 charges was something, I think it adds up to like 400, it's over 430 years.
Yeah.
So he will die in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the right outcome.
Yeah,
and
he
is where he should be. But the issue is that he should have been there a lot sooner. The police were in a position to prevent women being brutalised and they didn't do anything about it. The victim that he offended against when he got out of jail in 2019, the police are, as far as I see it, the police are responsible for that.
It's hard to see it any other way.
Yeah. And when I say the police, I don't mean the police as an organisation because I value them. My father's a retired police officer. I deal with the police. There are fantastic police officers in the job. But those who were responsible for the inaction, they need to be held accountable.
Well, I can't imagine anyone being more frustrated with this than the members of the sexual crime squad. I mean, and Nicole made the same point very clear. This is a very highly trained, highly skilled, highly experienced group who weren't invited in to this case, who weren't handed the case, and they're right there ready to deal with it and deal with it in a timely manner, deal with it professionally, and it wasn't handed to them. It's ridiculous. And we've spoken to members of that team and they are extraordinary and the work they do is amazing.
When I started speaking to the female detective who was assisting internal affairs on the second time. She was amazing. She was absolutely brilliant, and I will never, ever forget her. If it wasn't for her, I don't know that I would have moved forward with a complaint, because what was important for me is that I moved forward with a complaint for the right reason, and the right reason needed to be because it was the right thing for me to do, irrespective of what the outcome would be. Because initially when I was contacted by Internal Affairs in 2019, I felt obligated to make a complaint because it was the right thing to do. And I was weighing that up. And this detective was amazing. And she just said to me, she goes, "That's not your job, Josie. It is not your job to convict him." She said, "That's our job. You need to do what is the right thing for you." And that was a huge relief for me.
Yeah, that is great. And that is something that so many women are sitting with every day, how to move forward for themselves with, through all of these feelings of responsibility to other women, trying to figure out what is the thing to do, the right thing to do for themselves, trying to cope with their own emotions and everything that's going on. And to be honest with you, I went to the police to report a sexual assault, and they just told me straight out, there's no point.
It's so difficult.
There are so many of us who have to find a way to just accept that. And they were like, "You could if you really want to, but this is the way it's going to play out. And you just have to walk out the door and go home and get on with your life and figure out how to do that."
It's so difficult. And to not have someone believe you, that's what cuts.
Yeah.
Because I found it very difficult to believe myself. You know, for me, I was my worst critic. I was, "You stupid idiot, you silly," swear, you know.
But like you said, you know, intellectually you're saying to yourself, "I know it's not my fault. I know you can't blame women." And we've been telling ourselves and telling each other that, we know that. But then when it's you, you do feel all those feelings of, "I'm an idiot, it's my fault, I shouldn't have been there, shouldn't have said that, shouldn't have done that." You still feel all of those feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember when I went and saw SARC, the Sexual Assault Referral Centre, you know, because I was berating myself. And she actually said to me, she said, "Josie, you should be able to go out for a drink with a man and be able to come home safely. That's not an unreasonable expectation."
No. And even as I said earlier, I understand the wanting to take back your power. I understand wanting to like feel like, no, I'm not leaving this feeling so disempowered. You know, I'm just going to go, I'm going to have a drink with this guy, and I'm going to walk out of there feeling better about myself with my head held high. I get that even.
Yeah, but that was very hard for me to come to, even to get to that point, because all it was is, "Why did you do that? Why did you do that? He did that to you the first time. What were you thinking?" Well, you're certainly not expecting a serving police officer to slip something in your drink and then sexually assault you. He's a monster.
He is a monster.
And he's where he needs to be. He's not going to hurt anybody else. He's caused so much trauma.
Yeah, this is the guy they say, "Oh, these guys don't really exist, you know. Most people are sexually assaulted by people they know," and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, this is the kind of guy they make horror movies about. But in this case, he was a real person. He is a real person.
But it's taken me a long time to be able to actually think about the offence and deal with it, because I just didn't, you know. I've been diagnosed with PTSD, but it's in the avoidance cluster. So that's how I have dealt with it, which is by not dealing with it. So what happened for me is when the trial was approaching, I had a very, very difficult time because it wasn't just the fact that the trial was coming up. It was obviously everything that I hadn't dealt with or resolved in relation to the assault was actually coming up. None of my family knew. I didn't tell any of my family. The only person that I did tell was my sister when he got arrested in March of 2020. I did tell my sister what had happened.
How did you talk to your dad about this? So your dad got a visit from the coppers and thought, no, not Josie. What is this?
At that time, it was to do with the computer access. So that's all I told my dad about was the computer access side of it. I only told my dad about the assaults last weekend.
No.
Yeah. And he was amazing. He was 180 opposite of what I was expecting. I thought that he would go into police officer mode with 20 questions and be like, when did it happen? You know, and just be like that. And he was totally the opposite. I got a glimpse of my father and what he would have been like when actually dealing with victims of sexual assault. And he would have been amazing. He said he was disappointed, but he said, I'm disappointed towards, because he calls, that's my name for him, mm-hmm. from him. He just said, I'm disappointed towards that I wasn't there to support you, but I understand why you didn't tell me.
Yeah.
You know, he said he was really pleased and happy that I was telling him, because he said, for me, this is like you are lancing a boil. This is a healing for you, Toots. This is good for you, and I'm here for you. He's ropeable about the inaction of the police. He's gobsmacked. When I started to explain, you know, the scenario and what happened, he was, well, there would be F-bombs dropped everywhere, but he said, it should have gone to the sex assault squad immediately. They're trained to investigate these types of offences. Internal affairs are not.
And is he an ex-copper who still loves the cops? Like, is he a brotherhood guy?
Yeah, I call him and his old cronies.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of retired, like, coppers that he spends his time with. They have their war stories. He has told a couple of his mates. One was a coronial investigator. They're top investigators, and they are shocked and they are extremely angry. They're upset because of what's happened to me, but they just can't comprehend the inaction.
Because it's happened at executive level. And the frustration too is the refusal to still accept that, right? So I know that Nicole is pushing for this, and I'm assuming you are supportive of this idea of a review, but a real review, not an internal reviews are just the most idiotic, frustrating things in the world in any industry. As soon as someone says, oh, we've had an internal review, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
Seriously. How about an external review? How about you get, that's the point of a Royal Commission or any of those things, is like, you need fresh eyes, guys. You need other people to look at your systems and say, well, like everyone who looks at this case and goes, well, we'll tell you point number one, you've got an incredibly skilled unit down the hall that handles these issues. Why? And next time you must hand it to them. Like, don't ever let this happen again. But, you know, police are so risk averse, so criticism averse, aren't they? They just hate criticism so much.
There needs to be accountability, and it's not just the accountability side. There needs to be an independent inquiry as to the handling of this, as to why it occurred. They need to assess and reevaluate what went wrong. If people need to be held to account, they need to be. They need to clean out. They need to have external eyes on this. They can say internally that they have done that. And I know that there have been some changes there, and hopefully they are for the better. But you need an independent external review into this situation. I mean, he was hiding in plain sight.
That's it.
And I can guarantee you that there would have been whispers or concerns about this officer.
Absolutely. And I think it also goes to the idea that we all have that you can't dob on a copper for anything. I mean, I know that every state in Australia has an issue about domestic violence with police. When I say an issue, I don't mean that they're any more prone than anybody else. But what I mean is that in family violence, in families in which there is a police officer, there is a hesitancy to report because the other family members feel like, what is the point? Why would I ring the police and say, our family member who is also police is violent at home and we've got a problem, because they won't investigate it the same way, they won't deal with it the same way. So in every state, there's a task force, there's a special, you know, they're doing reports, they're doing everything to try and fix that, deal with it, because we just have no trust. We have no trust in police policing police. And so this is just another example of that people will point to and say, see, that's why.
Yeah, I'm absolutely mortified and shocked, and I am betrayed. I feel betrayed because I value this institution. I went to the gatekeepers basically and they did nothing, and they already knew. That's where I get stuck. I just cannot get past that point. How can that happen?
And it's a betrayal of police, you know.
It is.
The job that they do, the really hard job they do for the rest of the community.
They have an absolutely extremely difficult job to do. And I value the police. It's just gut-wrenching to have that faith and trust taken away in such a manner. And I think I was finding it hard to want to tell my dad about it as well, because it was his life too.
His identity is such a big part of his identity.
Yeah, and so I don't want to be involved in groups that, you know, just complain and bitch and moan about the police, because I've had a bad experience, because that's, I value them. I want it to be a healthy, robust organisation, and the only way that that's going to happen is if there is change and there is an independent inquiry, that they can move forward, that it can be, you know, that their reputation can come back, that it can be an organisation that can be valued and looked up to. That's gone for me, and that hurts too.
So where do you go from here? I mean, the last, you know, 14 years of your life have been so affected by this experience, from being raped by a police officer to feeling like you couldn't report, to feeling like you have to rebuild your life, and then feeling this sensation of guilt that in some sense, because you didn't report, other women were attacked. And, you know, this, it's so heavy, babe. It's the understatement of the year. And then going through the court process. So where are you now?
I'm in a good place, I think. I made a decision last year when I was sitting in the Supreme Court, and for the hearing, and then when the judgment came through, I just made a decision that I'm going to come back to the Supreme Court, but it's going to be for me this time. And that's because I decided to finish off the final qualifications for my law degree and to be admitted.
Oh my God.
Yes. So I'm currently doing it's called your PLT, practical legal training, with the aim to being admitted. I don't know if I'll ever practice. I may or I may not, but I did. I remember sitting in that courtroom and looking around and thinking, you know what, next time it's going to be for me.
That's amazing, Josie.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I've been told I'm stale because my degree's so old. And I remember thinking, don't say that to a middle-aged woman.
Don't ever say that.
So there's some, you know, there's some hurdles I'll have to go through. But
oh, God. I mean, if anyone can keep getting over hurdles, it's you. You know, that's the thing about having a lot of hurdles in your life. You know, you become a hurdler.
must be pretty damn good at it, eh?
Do you guys hang out much, like you and Nicole or any other of the victims? Did you make contact?
Yeah, I'm in touch with a few of the ladies, and Nick and I have become fast friends. She is amazing, and we both have a similar sense of humour. So I don't know, it can be a bit dark sometimes, but you have to be able to laugh about terrible things that have happened. And she's someone that I can talk to without worrying that it'll be taken the wrong way or that I'll offend the person, and just to have that in my life and to try and encourage her to keep going, because what she's been through, I mean, in some ways I feel like a fraud, because it's hard to explain. My paradigm is that I was raped and sexually assaulted by a police officer, and I got out of it lightly, because that's the reality of it compared to what's happened to these other women, you know. And to be able to connect with Nick and just have someone where we're on the same page and we can support each other is unbelievable. And I'm so glad to have her in my life. The circumstances that brought that about are absolutely shitty beyond belief, but you have to be able to look and see what good has come out of an absolutely revolting abomination. And, you know, I've made an absolutely amazing friend, and I have this woman in my life who will stand by me through thick and thin, and me for her as well, you know. It's just amazing.
Thank you to our guest today, Josie. If you need support after listening to this podcast, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or contact 1-800-RESPECT on 1-800-737-732 or 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. Indigenous Australians can contact 13 Yarn on 13 92 76 or 13yarn.org.au. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. We'll be back next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Australian True Crime, the nation's leading independent true crime podcast, is hitting the road with our live show. We're coming to Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane this July, and tickets will be available starting May 10th at 9:30 a.m. sharp. They sold out in 2 hours last time, so do not dilly-dally. We know the suburbs of Australia are teeming with some of the most intriguing and chilling true crime stories the world has ever heard. Don't miss the chance to dive deeper and get involved with a live Q&A. With over 1.5 million downloads monthly, these tickets will sell out. So keep an eye on our social media pages and check the podcast bio for direct links to purchase yours as soon as they're released on Friday, May 10. I can't wait to see you there.